Hey everyone, welcome to Mentally Chill. This is the last episode of Mentally Chill in the year 2017. The next one will obviously be out in 2019, skipping 18 because I'm a little lazy, so just kidding. The next one will be out in 2018. However, I think this episode is going to be very representative of every one of my New Year's Eves in my life, which is kind of disappointing. I'm still home for the holidays, and I didn't bring back my recording equipment because I didn't think I was going to be here this long. And if I was here this long, I thought, well, I won't put an episode out because it'll be Christmas and they'll understand. But then I rethought that, and I don't like the idea of not having an episode out. So what we're doing this week is putting an episode out recorded on my cell phone. So if you're wondering why the quality of this episode is so good, you can thank iPhones and Apple. So it's just going to be me today. And before I get started, of course, I have a lot of Patreon thank yous to give. I didn't give them in a few of the other shows because I had pre-recorded them and at the time didn't have these people's support. And now I do, and I'm very happy. So the first shout out I want to give is to Kevin for upgrading. I guess you would call it upgrading. I don't know. Downgrading, basically. If you pay more to Patreon, you're downgrading your own life, but you're upgrading mine. So thank you, Kevin, for downgrading/upgrading to $50 a month. That's so generous of you. You're awesome, and you've already been super supportive. So thank you so much. And Alonzo gets a special shout out also. If you guys don't know and you don't follow me on Instagram or Twitter or Snapchat, which you should, Twitter at Kristen Carney, Snapchat and Instagram at Chris Carn, you might have seen that I went out and hung out with a Mentally Chill fan, Alonzo. And I feel like, Alonzo, I can call you a super fan only because your interactions are so great because you reference things in the podcast all the time. So I feel like you're definitely on the level of a super fan, but you're my super friend now. But Alonzo and I hung out because Alonzo's from upstate New York, which is where I'm from. So I thought when I flew back, we should meet. And so Alonzo and I grabbed lunch. We did a little shopping and we had a really good time. And Alonzo, thank you so much for donating. You're awesome and you are very well aware of that. And also, more shout outs to Sarah, Joel, and Cameron. Thank you for being so generous with your donations. And I also want to say thank you to Ray. You're awesome. Amy, super cool. Tom Tizzy, you know who you are. And I love that your name isn't even actually. So here's the deal with Tom Tizzy. That's not his real name. That's his Twitter name. But he spells it T-H-O-M for Tom. And not Tom, like T-O-M. I mean, it's Tom, but it's T-H-O-M. Which, it's funny because if it's a fake name, why pick the more convoluted spelling? That's the only question that I have, Tom. Why the convoluted spelling? But, you know, I love you. You're great on Twitter. And thank you for the lovely message. Also, shout out to Jenny. And even more shout outs. I know you guys love these as listeners, right? This is the best part. I hope you're not fast forwarding through these. If it were me, I'd fast forward through it. But it's because I am very low on patience, and I will get into why I'm low on patience in just a short time or in just a moment. I will get to that. But more thank yous to Miranda, Rob, James, Johnny, Kat, real cats, like actual cats also, because they go to Patreon because they know that that's a good thing to do. Michael, Jonah, and finally, Sarah. Thank you guys for donating. Great Christmas present to me. Huge, huge thank you. I am the starving child that needs your support. So thank you for being so generous and reaching out to someone in a third world country. I really, really appreciate it. Now on to the show. So what I want to talk about today is my weaning off of my antidepressant. I've mentioned it. I haven't gotten into too much detail, and also time has passed, so I've had more of an experience since the last time I've mentioned it. So I figure I'm alone, it's a good thing to talk about. And one more thing before I get to chatting about the withdrawal stuff, I want to read a review from TDK Freedom Rider. Thank you for writing such an awesome review. It's surprising to me that this show is so helpful to people with many different problems, not just straight up depression and or anxiety, things like that. So TDK Freedom Rider gave 5 stars because he knows how to count and is super smart. His review is great. It's pretty long. Hang in there. It's worth it. So he says, I have stuttering speech impediment, so I can relate to this in a few ways. I never have been diagnosed with a mental illness. However, growing up a stutterer since, you know what I feel like? I really feel like reading this. I do things where it's, you say, don't do it so much to yourself in your head that you'll end up doing it. But I'm saying to myself, don't stutter when you're reading this review. And all I'm thinking about is not stuttering. So all I now want to do is stutter. And if I do it, pretend I'm joking, because I'd rather have it be more of a joke than me actually stuttering, because I get so in my head. So I'm anxious reading this. I'll start from the beginning. No stutters. And it's probably not going to happen that I make it through without stuttering, because it's very long. So anyway, here we go. I have... See, and TDK Freedom Rider, I don't know if you meant to write, I have a stuttering speech impediment, or if it's technically called stuttering speech impediment, so you don't need the A in front of it. But this is, makes me want to stutter, this part. I have stuttering speech impediment. So I don't know if that's correct or not. But it doesn't matter if it's correct. I just don't know if I'm saying it wrong or right. Therefore, then it makes me think twice and then want to stutter. Even though I've never had a stuttering problem, I do now, apparently. Thanks, TDK Freedom Rider. Now I'm going to have a stuttering issue for the rest of my life. Anyway, at least I'd be known for something. You know what I mean? Okay, so he says, I have stuttering speech impediment, so I can relate to this in a few ways. I never have been diagnosed with a mental illness. However, growing up a stutterer since a child, I have some memories over time that I want to forget. Now I'm very fluent in my speech. However, it comes and goes at times, but I'll always have the stutter. It is how you move on to the next day and beyond, living every day, all day long, and being the best person you can possibly be is my outlook on life, or how I try to be. I have my own personal release in skiing and mountain biking practically every day, and I have bad days. However, that is my own personal release that makes my own days better. He's referring to the skiing. I was hoping you'd be referring to my podcast, but it is my own natural antidepressant. This podcast helps with my own mental outlook. You know what? TDK Freedom Rider, you stuttered in the review because you wrote, this podcast helps with my own mental outlook. So you're not cured yet, TDK. JK. This is how we have to deal with it. We have to joke about it. Okay, so this podcast helps with my own mental outlook on life. Beyond that, I feel better listening to it than I did before I listened. Sometimes you have to check your ego at the door to really see yourself. I may do crazy things in the mountains. I realized listening to this, I used that to feel equal to everyone else. My stuttering gave myself a slight moment of depression, and I never fully realized this until I started listening to the show. Thanks. Oh, I gave you depression. That's great. I'm dishing out depression like soup at a food bank. Thanks, Stevie and Kristen. Rest in peace, Stevie, for putting the best possible into each episode. Thank you, TDK. The reason I really wanted to read this was because I noticed at the end, I really like the end that you say, putting the best possible into each episode. And the reason I like that is because I am afraid that I don't put enough into each episode. And it makes me nervous. Every week I release an episode, I think, oh, I could have done this better, or I could have done that better, which is true. You can always do something different or better. But the fact that the show reads as if I'm putting a lot into it, which I am, I just feel like I'm always mad at myself. I didn't research this, or I should have researched that, or I should have edited this or whatever. So the fact that it sounds like I'm putting my best possible in each episode makes me feel really good. Because I am putting a lot into them. If I did put my best into each show, though, I would be mentally exhausted, which, and I do try to put my best, but there is a limit to that. It's like you get a burst of energy or motivation, and then you lose it after it's steam, you know, you run out of steam, and I seem to run out of steam after about an hour. So I feel like this is, I do what I can, and then I kind of like poop out and have to go lay down. So today I wanted to chit-chat about the withdrawing, having withdrawal from antidepressants and the experience that I'm having. I think it varies in experience, and I can only speak to my experience because I don't read. I could speak to other people's experiences if I read them, but I don't because I don't know how. I never learned. I'm just lazy, as you guys know. But no, I've read a few things here and there about other people's experiences, but I can tell you about mine. And I mentioned on the Patreon page, which I didn't say earlier, but if you do want to support the show, please do go to patreon.com/mentallychill. There's a lot of awesome posts up there. But I posted recently on Christmas a quick little blurb saying that I didn't have the best Christmas ever. And it was my own fault and my own problems. But I think a lot of it had to do with going through withdrawal from my antidepressant. So I've done it before, and I think it went pretty smooth before. I do think my situation when I came off of the antidepressants before, which was a year ago or a year and a half ago, last summer, I was in a little bit of a different position emotionally. I hadn't lost Stevie. I didn't really know Stevie yet. I mean, I knew her, but we weren't super close yet at that point. But I wasn't going through anything traumatic, and I wasn't feeling an extreme low or anything. So I did feel a very smooth transition off of the antidepressants. I went off of them due to insurance reasons. And then I did hit a point where life was getting pretty hard. And so the transition was fine getting off of them. I didn't feel any severe ups and downs. But as I think they were completely out of my system, I did have more difficult things happening in my life at that juncture, and I couldn't handle them, and I fell very, very, very low, and I needed to get back on my antidepressants. And so it's like when you need something bad enough, you'll figure out how to get it. And I did need them bad enough where I figured out a new insurance thing, which finding insurance feels like it's actually harder than hiking Mount Everest, actually. So because I found insurance, I can say I hiked Mount Everest forever, except I don't have any Instagram posts about it, which sucks. I feel like there needs to be a Mount Everest for depression. Like, we need a visual, almost like a fake one that we can set up that looks like a mountain, and you stand at the top of it, and it's like, I made it to the top of Mount Everest, but it's just a depression mountain. And we can, so people with depression who do anything because they feel like they're hiking Mount Everest, they get at least an Instagram photo about it. Because it's like people who are actually hiking it get the Instagram photo. We don't get the Instagram photo, but yet we achieved Mount Everest in our mind. So I definitely feel like that should come with an Instagram photo. But anyway, I got basically on Medi-Cal or whatever. Yeah, Medi-Cal. To get my antidepressant because I needed it that badly. Again, the transition to that point wasn't bad, though. It was a very smooth drop into darkness. Whereas right now, I don't necessarily feel a drop into darkness. What I feel is very mood swingy. And that's very atypical for me. Despite the fact that I'm sad a lot, I'm very flatline sad. Like, I'm not going all over the place. My mood doesn't change quickly or dramatically. The only time my mood changes and I get rage is when I do see the stuff that really just angers me, and then I'll just shoot into a rage. But that's a different scenario than the mood swings that I'm feeling now. It's like before I know what would set me off, and this time around, having these mood swings, it's like I'm not predicting the frustration, it'll be something so small. Because basically what I'm trying to say is like tasks and things like that, they'll frustrate me, but I won't go into a mood swing or get very quickly angry at these things. I'll get quickly angry at someone double parking or taking up two spaces or something. But this holiday season, I've been feeling easily set off by doing little tasks. So like, for example, I spilled orange juice yesterday, and normally that wouldn't make me angry. I'm like, stupid orange juice, and just move on. But I'm feeling like something so minute like that happens, and I want to take the glass and throw it at the wall, which is very strange, because normally the only time I feel like that is wanting to take someone's head who's an asshole and throw it into the wall. But so it's different. So that's what I'm experiencing, is the mood swings, and I don't like it because it's very, very out of character, and I don't like being unpredictable. And so on Christmas Day, I had a bit of a mood swing because, as you guys know, I'm home in my hometown for Christmas. And if you listen to the podcast, you know how much I don't like where I'm from. And I almost have a weird reaction to being home in the wintertime. It reminds me of coming home from college and feeling very uncomfortable with myself physically, and the connections I make, like the feeling of the cold air reminds me of having eating issues or something. And so I just feel very uncomfortable. So I've kind of been on edge. And then on top of it, it was my lady time on Christmas. I'm not saying I'm lady time means like I'm gay and having a girlfriend around or something. It means my period. And so on Christmas, it wasn't a great thing because I was very moody already with my antidepressant. And then I was very hormonal with my period. And my sister and I had a disagreement over jewelry. And it's like, you know, it's a chemical imbalance when you lose it over jewelry. So my sister and I have very different tastes. We always have had very different taste. And my sister said, would you wear this? Referring to a bracelet. And I was like, no, I mean, it's pretty for you or for mom, but I would never wear it. And then her reaction, like looking at me like, what do you mean? Just set me off. And I like threw whatever I had in my hand and stomped away like I was a child, because I am a child. And got very emotional and then just cried in my niece's playroom for Christmas. So when my mom came in, it was like, she knows I'm going off of my antidepressants. She knows I was on my period. And she just reminded me that the upset feelings I was having was due to all of this chemical hormonal shit going on in my brain. So the getting off the antidepressants hasn't been mentally as easy as it was the first time for me. And I've been going off of the antidepressants relatively quickly, but I basically haven't taken any in a week. But I've been taking just like super teeny tiny doses. So I'm normally on 75 milligrams, and I have like one pill left with the little pellets in it. One capsule with the pellets, and it has about 10 little pellets left. So I have those for safety keeping, but I'd kind of just gone to like taking like 5 pellets a day to now for the past week, I've really taken nothing. And this is when the mood issues have set in. And then I've been having the brain zaps, which is normal. Last week I was getting them once every like 2 days, and that's when I started taking nothing until I'd feel a brain zap. So I was taking about 5 milligrams every 2 days when I was feeling the really bad brain zaps. And looking online at other people's experiences of the withdrawal symptoms, some people, it sounds like it can be a lot worse. So I'm grateful for how unterrible it is, but it's not great, but it's not as awful as you'd think. So here's a little couple blurbs. So about other people going off of antidepressants and their experiences. One lady was on Effexor, and once she felt like she had taken it for 10 years, once she felt like she really didn't need it, she went off of them slowly with her doctor, but she said it was so painful to lift her head. It felt like she was experiencing the world's worst hangover, and she would curl up into a ball and stay in bed. She said she didn't remember feeling that bad before she was on an antidepressant. So that sounds awful. Like, I don't feel like I have the world's worst hangover, even though I can get the world's worst hangovers. I have one drink, and it's like someone roofied me, basically. So hint, hint to the men out there, one drink is all you need. So I have an article in front of me that says the 7 things that will happen when you stop taking antidepressants. Well, number one, it says it can take more time than you think. We weren't kidding about the slowly part. Many people expect to feel back to normal within a couple of days after quitting their medication, much like people expecting starting an antidepressant to make them feel better in a flash, when it really can take several weeks. Typically, the drug is out of your system 2 weeks after stopping, but effects can linger for 2 months. It depends on how long you were on the meds to begin with also. Your brain might feel strange. Stopping too quickly or even cold turkey has been anecdotally, that's not that hard, I can say that. Your brain might feel strange. Stopping too quickly or even cold turkey has been linked with what many people, especially in online forums, refer to as brain zaps, which obviously I talk about. I had a patient who stopped Paxil. I'm reading an article from prevention.com, by the way. I had a patient who stopped Paxil without tapering and described electricity going through her. The phenomenon really isn't understood by experts, and there's not enough evidence to prove discontinuing antidepressants causes the brain zaps, which I think is really stupid, because obviously that's what's causing the brain zaps. Here's an example. This lady, Tammy, was on Lexapro for about 6 months for anxiety before she had to stop taking them due to a change in her insurance. Love you, insurance. She tried to wean herself off by cutting her pills in half before stopping entirely, but she only had enough for about a week and wasn't able to continue working with her doctor. For about a month, I would blink my eyes and get super dizzy, almost like an electric shock went through my brain. I'd have to sit down or I'd almost fall over. It made even the simplest daily tasks nearly impossible, she says, as it happened all day long. She says, I might have weaned off a little too fast. I would definitely tell someone to consult a doctor or pharmacist, as would I. And as you know, I'm not a doctor or a pharmacist. I would never want to be a pharmacist. That looks so ridiculous to me. You spend X amount of money on school and X amount of years in school to stand in a drugstore with fluorescent lighting? Ugh. No, I feel like if you pay that much for a degree, you should at least be in an environment with nice lighting, some mood lighting, which brings me to, actually, I think the gynecologist's office, the actual rooms, I mean, the waiting room, you can always use nice mood lighting, by the way, but in the actual rooms, I think they should have better lighting, because you're in an unflattering position with fluorescent lights. I would be totally more comfortable at the gynecologist if there was like a nice lamp with nice mood lighting and maybe a shag carpet and her or him, I tried to find a female gynecologist, but her or him with maybe just like a flashlight on their head, like they're going under the city to look at pipes, like a, what are they called? Someone who like works in coal mines or something. Because basically that's what the vagina is. It's a coal mine. But they really need to work on the lighting there. And I had a gynecologist. It was the creepiest and worst thing ever. I had a gynecologist that was so old. I was really young. It was like one of my first, basically, he deflowered me with a tool. I was like 16 or whenever you have to first start seeing someone for your vagina. And he was so old that first of all, he's a man, so it's uncomfortable, and he's an old man, and you're 16 years old, and an old man is looking at your vagina. It's the weirdest thing and should be illegal. He used to be my grandmother's gynecologist, and then he was my mother's gynecologist, then he was my gynecologist. So we had three generations of our vagine, and it made me very uncomfortable. And I think I asked him out on two dates or something. Maybe I asked him out on three. I think on the fourth he rejected me. He was way more into my grandmother. But anyway, I have since then been dating a different gynecologist. So, side note. Okay, number three. Your mood will probably change, but maybe only temporarily, which sucks. I'm really hoping that the maybe part goes away. I don't want to be a moody person. I've never been a moody person, and I don't want to be a moody person. But it says the most common antidepressants are called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which is SSRIs, which is what I was on, which block the reabsorption of the brain chemical serotonin, leaving it free floating. Take the drugs away, and the serotonin gets absorbed again, which can result in minor or rather pronounced mood changes. Some research suggests that when people stop antidepressants, excuse me, I just ate my gynecologist, so I'm burping a little bit. Some research suggests that when people stop antidepressants, they may face an increased risk of suicidal thoughts, obviously, as we've known and experienced with Stevie, although there's been no link to actually acting on those ideas. I don't really understand what that means. There's been no link. What are you talking about? No link. Look at Stevie. Some of these articles I'll read anyway. They're terrible, but I found it, and so I'm reading it. Number four, you may feel it in your gut. Believe it or not, we've got the same neurotransmitters that send around chemical messages in our brain as in our guts. Many people discontinuing SSRIs report symptoms like nausea, vomiting, and changes in appetite. And for me, I have gotten an increased appetite, which is driving me insane, and I don't want an increased appetite. I like being skinny. I like feeling hungry. I do. I'm not in an effed up way, but I like feeling light on my toes. After I eat too much, I kind of get into a bad mood. And since I've been going off of the antidepressant, I'm eating and almost feeling like it's falling into a pit of, like it's falling into a well, there's just never hitting into my stomach. And so I don't feel like I'm getting full. So I've been eating a lot more. I'll feel full physically where my stomach feels like I have 10 children stuffed into it, but I still have a pit or like a yearning for food or still an ache for food. And that's definitely been from going off the antidepressants. And honestly, that makes me depressed enough to go back on antidepressants because I don't want to gain weight. And it's the opposite of the normal effect because normally you gain weight when you go on antidepressants. I didn't, thank God. And now I'm freaking out that I will be gaining weight. And by the way, I'm not planning on staying off of antidepressants. I'm planning on getting back on them if I need them. If I don't, of course I won't. But I would much rather get on an antidepressant when I'm in a better position insurance-wise, because I don't want to just go to the doctor or like a general doctor and have them throw whatever at me and it not work and then try a bunch of different things. I really don't want to do that, because when you have crummy insurance like the one that I will be getting back on shortly, there's no psychiatrist available on that insurance plan. I called every single psychiatrist in the book besides like four, because they had basically negative star reviews. Not one of the people listed in the book for Medi-Cal actually accepted Medi-Cal for psychiatry, which is horrifying and awful. So once I get on better insurance, then I will try to figure this out again if I need to, which I'm sure I will. Number five, you should have some other coping mechanisms already in place, which I think is great advice, but it's so unpredictable when you're going to be needing that coping mechanism. You might be doing fine and think, well, I don't need anything, and then crash, boom, and it's too late for you to even get on the bandwagon of your coping mechanism. But basically it says, we know some of the most straightforward healthy habits can alleviate some of the pain of depression, like getting adequate exercise and sleep and taking up a relaxing practice like meditation. But don't assume the safety net is there for you if you haven't strung it up yourself. I'm a runner, this lady says, and I think that helped clear my head a little bit, which that's so awesome. But as I always say, when you're so depressed, to even put your sneakers on to run is the battle. And so it's not always possible to do something therapeutic. So I feel like the coping mechanism that's set in place should be one that's very easy and accessible and low. So something like watching a movie or going to the movies, that's not exercise. Obviously, exercise is good for the chemical levels in your brain, but if you decide to do exercise as your coping mechanism, you may be setting yourself up for failure because you're not able to even put your exercise clothes on because it's too hard. So personally, I say go low with the bar. That way it's harder to fail. And someone like me feels really good going to the movies. And I think I mentioned before, but I feel a crash after the movies because it's like back to reality, back to real life. But I think at least having that 2-hour break is at least something. It's better than nothing. So I definitely say set that bar low. And if it's not going to the movies, it's watching a movie. Friends and family can also provide support while you're tapering off your medications. They can notice symptoms maybe you don't notice yourself. And as I mentioned, my moodiness, my mom had pointed out because I snapped at her a couple times. And I'm not a snappy person. I am embarrassed for the mood changes, but my mom had pointed out that I had been being snappy and a little hot-headed, which she noticed before I had my moment. So they can notice symptoms that maybe you don't. Depending on the patient's relationships with those people, maybe they can say they've noticed you might be getting a little irritable again. Irritable. Or you're not sleeping as well. You can get help from your support system if you trust them and are opening to listening to them. So that's a little something about withdrawing from medication. I will say, though, what I love is not having to worry about if I took the pill or not. Because when it becomes so habitual to take your antidepressant, you throw it back in your throat. You don't even know you did it. And then 2 minutes later, you're like, wait, did I just take that or did I not? And then I don't overthink it, but then I'm like, should I just take another one? But then that's like a double dose. If I did take it already, should I not take it? But then I'm going to start feeling brain zaps and blah, blah, blah. So it is nice to not have to worry about that. But also, being on an antidepressant, it's nice not having to worry about breaking down and crying every 5 seconds. So that is something. And we're already deep into the show. Surprisingly, it's so weird when I do a show alone, because before I tape it, I'm like, this is going to be really long and really boring, and I'm going to record 5 minutes and it's going to feel like I just did 20 minutes and I'm going to look and go, oh my God, it's only 5 minutes. Whatever. Okay. So I guess we'll get into some segments. First, F that shit. Intern Jesse, found a really cool article about psychedelics. Stevie and I talked about this microdosing a while ago. We didn't touch on it too heavily, I don't think, but there's this article from Harvard. So, you know, a bunch of smarties wrote it, so it must be real. And I'm not talking about Smarties the candy, even though I like those way better than the Smarties from colleges. But this article is called Worth the Trip, Psychedelics as an Emerger. Worth the Trip, Psychedelics as an Emerging Tool for Psychotherapy. As you close your eyes, a kaleidoscope vision of pattern, color, and sense of deep meaning engulfs your entire field of experience. 30 minutes ago, you were given a controlled dose of a highly potent and highly illegal hallucinogenic compound, all in the name of science. Months from now, you will say that this was one of the most profound experiences of your life. You have joined a small but growing number of human subjects participating in an exciting new wave of research. The aim of this work is to understand how an infamous class of mind-altering substances, the psychedelics, may actually be a powerful tool for treating certain forms of psychological suffering. Psychedelics are a special class of substances known for the vivid perceptual and cognitive changes they induce. Most are classified as Schedule 1 controlled substances. They're so responsible, these drugs, for being on a schedule. It's like, how do drugs get on a schedule and I don't? It's not fair. Legally, this means that the U.S. federal government believes they have a high potential for abuse, no currently accepted medical use, and are unsafe to consume even under medical supervision. Despite this legal classification, a variety of psychedelics are currently being studied in laboratory and clinical settings. The result of this research suggests that they are non-toxic, pose no significant risk of dependence, and show great promise in treating a variety of psychiatric ailments. But how do they actually exert their effects on the brain? Okay, so what do psychedelics actually do? This little next little segment here of this article. The classical psychedelics include a word I can't pronounce, psilocybin, psilocybin, probably, because I'm a doctor, an organic molecule found in a variety of fungi, magic mushrooms, which, just so you know, my dad, his go-to dad joke, he has like really bad fungus in his toenail on one of his feet, and it's been there since I can remember. And we've always wondered why he doesn't take care of it. And if you point it out, he says, it's because I'm a fun guy. Fungi, fungus, fungi, get it? It's where I get my comedy from, guys. This is why I am a successful comedian not needing to do a podcast. Okay, so whatever, I'll start that over. The classical psychedelics include this word that I can't pronounce, psilocybin, which is a molecule found in magic mushrooms, LSD, and the stuff which is DMT, it's a wheat fungus, an especially potent psychedelic produced by many plant species, DMT. The chemical structures of these compounds resemble serotonin, an important chemical messenger in the nervous system. One of their primary effects is to stimulate neurons in the brain that are naturally responsive to serotonin. These serotonin-sensitive brain cells are widespread in the wrinkly outer layer of the brain known as the cerebral cortex. Pretty soon I'm going to get Botox in the wrinkly outer layer of my brain, I have a feeling. I need Botox. I'm starting to get to that point, and I'm starting to freak myself out with my desire for Botox. That's a whole nother subject. Anyway, this structure is disproportionately large in humans compared to other mammals and is widely believed to endow us with many of our higher cognitive abilities that Kristen Carney lacks. That's actually in the article. Although psychedelics typically share similar chemical properties, the effective doses, routes of administration, and duration of their effects vary dramatically. The subject's effects also depend strongly on a person's environment and expectations. At low to moderate doses, these typically include mild to moderate distortions in cognition and sensory perception. At higher doses, profound life-altering experiences are commonly reported, often described as having a mystical or transcendental character. So I'm kind of skipping through, and basically what it's getting at is the experience that you have will be so life-altering that it will help with your mental cognition, I guess, or your mental problems. The article is very, very, very in-depth. It's not super, duper interesting for me to read just because it's very specific, but check it out. It's at harvard.edu, and it talks all about what part of the brain is being affected and what chemicals affecting it and why and all that kind of stuff. But psychedelics were originally studied in the mid-20th century and had already at that point showed promise in treating alcoholism and end-of-life anxiety. And so that was back in the day. But then the research had to be halted because of some Controlled Substance Act. And I think now they're getting back into it. So anyway, I feel like it's like a great thing to say, why not me? Why not me be a like contestant in the trial of magic mushrooms? It's basically cognitive reframing, and they kickstart that or something. So it's like, I'm too lazy, but if you're feeling it, go be that person who gets to be part of the trial. I don't know how they do it. I haven't looked it up, but if you're feeling it and you're like, I deserve this. I deserve to feel better. I feel like you should hit up Harvard or whoever's doing the research and try to get into the study. So do it. And so that's F that shit. And I'm going to do a who's sadder. It's really hard debating with myself on a who's sadder, but I'm going to. And this week's who's sadder is who's sadder. The person kissing someone on New Year's that they don't really want to kiss, or the person without anyone to kiss on New Year's. And I think before I would have said the person not kissing anyone isn't sadder because it's better to be alone than miserable with somebody else. But I've realized getting a little bit older into my 34 years that I think company is better than bad company is better than no company. Not all the time, but sometimes. And I think especially on times like New Year's Eve when it's a momentous occasion and being alone can be more depressing. This Thanksgiving, you guys know I did a show with my friend Justin, and I'm not saying that he's bad company. But we did a show together on Thanksgiving, and I was really, in my mind, I was really settled on the fact that I was okay being alone on Thanksgiving, and I kind of preferred it. But then Justin didn't have anything to do. He hit me up and we did something, and it was like dipping your foot into a cold pool. Even though you need that refreshingness, you don't want it, but you need it. And so I was glad that Justin and I ended up doing something that was much healthier for me mentally. And so I think the person who's not kissing anyone on New Year's won't be maybe aware that they're sadder, but they are sadder. I'm not saying make out with someone you don't like, but I do think if you're feeling super low, being with someone, be it the most annoying dude you've ever met in your life, at least he's distracting you from 2 hours of reality. So I think I'm going the person who's sadder is the person who's alone. Unless the person you kiss has wretched, wretched breath. In that case, go home and be alone and enjoy fresh air of your own home. I think who's the saddest is the person trying to debate this alone. That's me. It sucks having to do these alone. And I know I've said that before, but it does. It makes me really miss Stevie. Would you rather? I will also debate by myself. Here's my would you rather. Would you rather be doing this alone right now, or would you rather have Stevie here with you? That's a tough one. I'd rather have Stevie here with me. So that's the show. I don't want to debate it by myself. It really does get me depressed. And I hope all of you guys had a really good holiday. And if you didn't, like me, forget about it and move on. I decided next year I'm going to put things in place for me to not have a crummy Christmas, which is put my expectations aside for the people that I love. We may not be identical and the same, and that's okay. And this Christmas, it was bumming me out, but it shouldn't, and it won't next year. Also, don't want to have a bad Christmas? Stay on your antidepressants. Number one piece of advice from me personally going through it. And number three, sending a list of presents I want so I get so many good toys. Just kidding. I don't really care about that, but I would say those first two things. I hope you guys have a good New Year's. And if you're like me and don't like doing anything on New Year's, don't put pressure on yourself to do anything. Just veg and watch Overboard. If you guys have never seen the movie Overboard, please watch it. The reason I say Overboard is because there is a scene. It's with Goldie Hawn and what's his name? Kurt Russell. Such a good 80s movie. One of my favorite 80s movies. But there's a scene in Overboard where Goldie Hawn remembers back to being a rich girl and having this beautiful, perfect New Year's Eve where Auld Lang Syne is playing and they're at this classy party what's it called? It's flowing in the air. What's it called? Not glitter, not streamers, but oh my God, I hate how I forget words. You know what it's called. And you're all, everyone listening to this right now is going, this is the word. Listen, I wish you could hear me through my car. This is the word. Oh my God, why can't I think of the word? It's what you throw at parties. Anyway, I'm really, as soon as I'm done recording this, I'm going to remember what it's called. So frustrating. Anyway, that's falling and the piano's playing and she's wearing a beautiful dress and she's dancing and it's a lovely, lovely experience. And then when she wakes, but she's really dreaming and she wakes up to just water dripping on her head from the crack in the ceiling of her new like shack that she lives in. And I love that because when I was a kid, I used to envision that's how New Year's Eve would be when you were an adult. And I think stuff like that has contributed to my depression because I had these expectations of life in adulthood and it was magical and wonderful. And then it didn't meet those expectations. And so that scene in Overboard is one of them. And I think actually I'll post that scene on my Instagram. And if you actually do look in my Instagram, like from years ago, if you really have the motivation and really want to scroll, I did post a video of that a few New Year's ago, but I'll repost it. And if you want to see it, you can find me on Instagram at Chris Karn. And thank you again to everyone who has become a new Patreon supporter and to everyone for listening and for writing reviews and for sharing the show. Please continue to share the show with a friend. Make a friend if you don't have one. It's not as hard as you might think. If you have to drink to do it, do it. Just share the show. That's all I ask of you. And, well, it's not all I ask of you because I ask you to do Patreon too. But whatever, forget I said that. Lastly, if you want to hear me chat a little bit more and talk about some things, including, and very importantly, Stevie's passing, I was on the podcast, Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend. She's such a good interviewer, and she chats with me about a lot of things, but including Stevie's passing. And I'm kind of self-conscious of it because it's hard to express verbally how I really feel inside, and I don't want to come across too matter-of-fact, but I don't know how else to express it publicly. It's weird. It's very difficult. But anyway, if you are curious or want to know some more kind of things that can bring you some closure on Stevie, again, it's Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend, and the episode is just my name, so Kristen Carney. And you can find that on iTunes and all those kinds of places. So that's it for the show. Thanks for listening. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And as always, stay sad enough to listen, but not too sad. See you next time. Bye, guys.